here today, and this is a, we have some guests. I'm very happy they come here. Now, while the crowd in the audience here is mainly journalists, and we have one young generation journalist, the panel today is Mr. Faust and Anna from the director of the European Ombudsman. And I invited him here because he works, the office of the European Ombudsman gets a bit more than a third of your complaints concern transparency.
Yes.
So you know what this is about. And Elske Ratz, she works with Freshfields, which is a law office in Amsterdam. And she argues freedom of information or access to documents or war cases before the European Court of Justice, which affects us all with the decisions. And Scott Crosby, who is a transparency expert, who also, another lawyer based in Brussels, who also argues the FOI cases. And the way I found him was that I needed someone who could win this type of court cases before the European Court of Justice. And so I browsed the decisions and found some names and then called them. And you wanted to talk with me. Now, my overall aim with this panel is to share notes, because when we as journalists apply for documents or data within the European system, we go there because we want hard facts. And this is our immediate aim. Now, the secondary aim, which many of us often don't have the time to think of, but which we all should think of, is what does this create in good or bad case law? Now, if I get the documents, I'm happy, I put them out, and then that's it. If I don't get the documents, well, there are other stories that have to be written, and I leave bad precedent. So when I get a no from the European institutions, I can either go to the Ombudsman and get free legal help, which is then not legally binding at the end, but it has an impact because we see European institutions adjusting to the Ombudsman decisions. Or I can go to a lawyer, to the court, which is pretty expensive and which then is legally binding. Regardless of what I do, I have to think about the precedent that I have that I create as a journalist. So this is the aim of this panel, and this is hopefully the discussion afterwards. And now I would like to start with Mr. Santana. Tell us a little bit about the Ombudsman's work on the transparency issues.
Thank you very much. I'll try to be brief and to stay within the 10 minutes I've been giving. I will first explain to all of you who might not know what's the Ombudsman, what his role is, what his role has been in particular in relation with transparency matters. Then I will make a sort of a parallel between the role of the Ombudsman and the role of courts in these issues. I will then explain you a little bit our experience and the kinds of problems we come across in our inquiries. And I might share a few words with you and thoughts concerning the revision of the current regulation dealing with access to documents at the EU level. So first of all, about the Ombudsman as such, as an institution, as a body of the Union. It's a body, an institution, which was created in 1992 by the Maastricht Treaty. As some of you might recall, the most important feature of the Maastricht Treaty was the creation of the Citizens' Europe, the idea that citizens had a role to play in the construction of Europe. They were not simply spectators, they were actors. And one of the most important things that the Maastricht Treaty brought into the treaties was exactly the idea of transparency, the idea that decisions at the European level should be taken as openly as possible, and that with the participation of the citizens. At the same time, in the same Maastricht Treaty, the Ombudsman was created as an institution, exactly to enhance the relations between the European citizens and the European institutions. He was given the mandate to deal with complaints submitted against the European institutions by all European citizens or by residents in the EU. Of course, complainants can be also legal entities like companies, like NGOs, like associations, etc., as long as they have their seat in the EU. So that was the mandate given to the Ombudsman in the beginning. So transparency has been around since 1992. That's when the Maastricht Treaty entered into force. But frankly, the issues of transparency did not feature very high in the agenda, in the political agenda of the Union, until the enlargement of 1995 took place. I mean, the entry into the Union of two Nordic countries who joined Denmark and had a particular approach to transparency made things change. And at the same time, the first Ombudsman, who, by the way, was a Finnish, Mr. Jacob Söderman, took immediately a great interest in transparency issues. And the first thing he did, one of the first initiatives he took, was exactly to ask the three main institutions what had they done concerning transparency and access to documents. Following these own initiative inquiries, the three main institutions, Parliament, Council, and Commission, adopted what they called the Codes of Conduct, the first internal rules changing what was until then the leitmotif, or the way the institutions work, which was secrecy. Most institutions accepted that the Maastricht Treaty had changed the game and that transparency should now be the rule. These codes of conduct, internal to each of the three institutions, then were surpassed and replaced by the first law adopted at the European level. You might have heard about it, Regulation 1049, adopted in 2001, in which also the Ombudsman also participated in and submitted several comments. I will say afterwards what I think is the importance of 1049-2001, the regulation dealing with access to documents. So this about the history of the Ombudsman. That regulation, 1049-2001, established the principle, which is indeed a paradigm shift in what used to be the approach of the institutions concerning transparency, let's measure it like that, which was that, as a rule, all documents possessed by the institutions are public. That's the rule. And only if some exceptions apply should these documents not be released to the public. As I say, this represented a major shift in the political culture of the institutions, and if I may say so, even of many member states. Of course, the legal order can change very easily. That doesn't mean that the mentalities and the approach of people dealing with the law changes that rapidly. And it took indeed, it takes still a long time, for officials to integrate this new approach that all documents are in principle public. And that the exceptions that are foreseen in these regulations, supposed to protect some interests, which are worthy of protection, those exceptions should be applied in a restrictive way and not in a very extended way. So these are the main features about 1049. So, and this regulation established that not only the courts would be competent to control the implementation of this law, but also the Ombudsman. It was very appropriate so, because indeed the Ombudsman continued to play a big role concerning controlling the way in which institutions dealt with requests for access to documents. As has been said, the Ombudsman deals every year with about 30-something percent of all cases he deals with concern transparency in general, access to documents, access to information. So it is indeed a big part of the Ombudsman's work, every day's work. Now, how does he conduct his inquiries? He has very extensive powers of inquiry. For instance, he has the possibility, that's in his statute, that he has the possibility to have full access to all documents. So whenever there's a document an institution thinks or considers to be confidential and doesn't want to show you, if you complain to the Ombudsman, he has the power to go and see the documents. It cannot be refused. Any documents, even secret documents, meaning secret, those that sometimes the Council of Ministers pretends it has. But even in those cases, the Ombudsman must be given access to the documents and can see and inspect the documents. This is a very important tool because it allows the Ombudsman to really make his own assessment of whether the exceptions foreseen in the law do apply or not. Not only controlling the the rationale put forward by the institutions to refuse disclosure, but also making his own assessment on the substance. This is a very important tool, and that's, it has helped the Ombudsman to rapidly make an assessment of whether a document should or could be disclosed or not, or partially disclosed. So this is a very important tool that he uses regularly in all cases concerning access to documents. So, and then he can rapidly propose a solution if he considers that the document that the institution originally considered not to be disclosed, not possible to be disclosed, should be disclosed. He can rapidly propose a solution, be it a friendly solution or a draft recommendation, inviting the institution to disclose the document or to provide a better rationale for not being able to do so. Now, it is true that the Ombudsman's decisions, the recommendations, are not binding, they're not legally binding. However, experience shows, and we have now statistics concerning the rate of compliance institutions give to the Ombudsman's recommendation, the institutions tend to accept the Ombudsman's recommendation. 82% of all recommendations are accepted, which is by far a fantastic result, even compared with national ombudsman, even compared with national ombudsman of Nordic countries where the institution has been established for years and whoever benefit from a huge respect from the society and from the institution. So it is a good rate of compliance. Now, that doesn't mean that all stories are success stories. I will tell you about some cases where we had some problems, but cases also where the success was remarkable and that are worth mentioning. For instance, you know, the European Medicines Agency is an agency supposed to give market authorization for new medicines to be brought on the market. They used to have a policy of secrecy concerning all the clinical test reports that are supposed to be presented by the industry for supporting bringing a new product to the market. Well, since the Ombudsman made his inquiry and recommended the disclosure of this kind of clinical tests, clinical trial reports, so EMA has changed its position and has decided to make those reports, which are of utmost importance and interest for the public in general, for the citizens, and also of major importance for public health and safety. And that has been a major shift induced by the Ombudsman's inquiry into these matters. I remember also the case about agricultural data in databases, where the Ombudsman made the first attempt to open up for transparency data contained in database, which was not considered at the time by the institutions to be a document. But also some other cases where the success came late. I remember a case where an NGO asked for documents relating to the UK opt-out from the Charter of Fundamental Rights, and these documents were refused access. I don't even remember what were the arguments of the institution. The Ombudsman made a draft recommendation, friendly solution, then a draft recommendation. Both were rejected, to our great regret. And then, once the institution had the NGO requested again access to these documents with the intention of going to court, then, well, the institution just released the documents. Sure. So they didn't agree with the arguments of the Ombudsman, but they thought that their argumentation would not stand the court, so they decided to release them once the applicants submitted the new request. So there are good other cases, like I remember a case where the Ombudsman wanted the commission to release correspondence between a commissioner and the car producer at the time the director on CO2 emissions was going to be published, and those documents were considered confidential. The Ombudsman considered that they were not confidential, proposed a disclosure. The Commission took about 3 years to release the documents, which they actually did, but only after the Commission changed and the Commissioner was another person. So success comes sometimes late, sometimes belated, but there are success stories. Now, what are the problems we encounter with the application, with the implementation of this law? First of all, delays in handling requests. That's the major problem. The institutions do not respect regularly the delays or the deadlines that are laid down in the regulation. So they delay answering and refusing or providing argumentation. They do tend to interpret in a very extensive way the exceptions to the principle of transparency. And the third problem we find is that it is for you very difficult, for all citizens very difficult, to find out which documents they want to have access to, because there is no public register of documents held by the institution. So it's very difficult to go on a fishing expedition to know what documents you should ask for access to if you don't know what documents exist in the institution. So, and this is an obligation which is laid down in the law, but hardly any institution respects this obligation, the obligation to have a public register of all documents possessed by the institution. This is key for ensuring the transparency, the participation, and the right to ask for access. So these are the three main problems we come across in our inquiries. But as I say, there are many success stories. Just let me say a few words about the revision of this regulation 1049. It's been going on for 3 years, since 2010. It's very interesting to see that the original Commission position was not very favorable, in the opinion of the Ombudsman, not very favorable to transparency. Parliament's position was very favorable and very pro-transparency, but the old procedure is stalled. I mean, the Council of Ministers is surely not in the mood to make a push towards transparency. On the contrary, I personally think that if 1049 had not been adopted in 2001, it will never be adopted. Today, whatever modification will be done to this law will be in the wrong sense. I don't think, and it's not a problem of the Union, because, as I say, the European Parliament is very much pro-transparency, and its amendments are indeed very good, but there is no majority in the Council of Ministers, meaning within the member states, for making another push for transparency. So, in my personal opinion, this is just my personal opinion, we're better left out with 1049 as it stands. It gives you a very good basis for ask for documents, to exercise your role as journalists, and let's try to do the best with the tools we have. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, I think I went a little bit too.